The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the ESPN FC studios in today's edition of the show. I'm Sebastian Salazar. What a day of football we have to recap for you. Steve Nichol going to be by in just a little bit to revel in all the glory of Liverpool dropping seven. Ale Moreno and Julian Laurent will join us as well to discuss another match in which Barcelona dropped points. But we start at the top of the Bundesliga, a table-topping clash between Bayer Leverkusen and Bayern Munich. Leverkusen going ahead off a golazo from Patrick Schick early in this match. And then a script we've probably all seen many times before. Robert Lewandowski, a goal at the end of the first half. And then in the 93rd minute, he gets his brace. And Bayern Munich go top of the table thanks to their 2-1 victory. For more on this one, we welcome in Jurgen Klinsmann, Craig Burley, and Jan Agafjortov. Jurgen, I'll start with you. 2-1, a fair result for Bayern.
I think at the end of the day, definitely a fair result. They deserve to win at the end. Leverkusen started really, really well into the game. The first 20, 25 minutes, they controlled. They scored a beautiful goal through Schick. And then they had actually almost the second goal. It was then offside. And then they gave a Christmas gift to Lewandowski, you know, giving him his first goal just right before the halftime. And then, but second half, it was mostly Bayern Munich that controlled the game. And they badly then at the end, they wanted these 3 points. And that's the killer instinct that Bayern Munich has, you know, when they're not giving in. They just keep on going. And then they were rewarded with the second goal in the last minute. And deservingly so, I think.
Jan, what changed in this game? Because as Jurgen says, it really was kind of two different matches. Leverkusen so good in the opening half hour, and then somebody flipped the switch for Bayern.
Well, what can you say? I mean, is it a culture? Is it the spirit? If it's the will of winning games? Now, Jurgen got that DNA. He played at Bayern. They've done this for ages. They've done this for a generation, how they change things around. And for Bayern today, it was a normal day at the office. It was the seventh time they were 1-0 behind. They're coming back just before halftime. Remember, they did that in Dortmund as well when Alaba scored that goal. Then it's 1-1. And yes, Jurgen is talking about Christmas gifts. And first goal was a gift. Second one was a gift. And in the 93rd minute, I mean, I'm only concerned that my former club, Eintracht Frankfurt, would win games. But still, I'm sitting hoping, please, please, is there any chance that we can have a championship in Germany without them winning before Christmas? Well, they don't win it before Christmas this year, but I mean, that will Bayern got to win football games is so typical. It's FC typical. And Lewandowski getting 2 goals. He got 17. 1-7 goals now only this season. This is just magic. And we just have to say, big, big respect. The Leverkusen, I think, started thinking, oh, we are leading. We are leading against Bayern. We are top of the league. And what happened then? Well, we know they call them Leverkusen, and they show today why we call them that.
Craig, full credit to Bayern Munich, I suppose, for the comeback, but Leverkusen be kicking themselves, won't they?
Yeah, I thought for 35, 40 minutes of the first half, they were in control. Obviously, right at the end of the first half, Bayern put some pressure on. But you ask what flicks the switch when you give goals to teams of the calibre of Bayern Munich just before half-time, then it gives you a boost to come out and press and start well, and that's what they did. But look, you know, we know Bayern play this high line, and they did it all game. They played an offside trap, and, you know, Leverkusen will look at themselves. I know they'll look at their mistakes defensively, but they'll look at their decision-making in terms of their passes in behind, in terms of their runs. And if you're going to beat an offside trap, it doesn't always have to be the front players that are trying to bend the run in. It could be a midfield runner from deep. And we just didn't see enough of that, and hence they get caught offside so many times. But I thought Leverkusen, had they played or fought out the final ball a little bit better, could have been in so many occasions, but they didn't. And they paid the ultimate price. You know, they gifted the ball away for the first goal, and then Tah and the goalkeeper go for the one ball. Then Tah has the bad touch, the really bad touch for the winner from Lewandowski. And you just can't make these mistakes, unfortunately. And I think Bayern, with a team that didn't really look like a Bayern team, with Süle at right back and some players coming back from injury, managed to go away from home to the league leaders and get the result.
Jan, Jurgen mentioned it, seven straight Bundesliga matches in which Bayern Munich have conceded first. Obviously, they've come back in all those matches to either win or draw, but is it a problem?
But is it a problem to be the best team in the world? I think that's what we have to discuss. I mean, it looks like Bayern just teasing people. If you have a look at the table as well, they're conceding goals for fun. And Manuel Neuer is playing brilliantly. So it's a paradox season for them. But I guess we just have to say, when you come behind against Leverkusen, and I agree with the boys, they say Leverkusen is a very good team, good going forward, tactically today, maybe not at their best in the decision making, but they've had a very good season, and still they are playing away from home, get that 1-0 and back, and then most teams, they will kind of go down a bit under performance, but Bayern have that thing that just get them going, and then somehow it just seems that, okay, we just have to do more, we just have to do a little bit more. And when you had a look at the bench today, they had Kimmich back today. Kimmich came on, and maybe we'll talk about it, but Leroy Sané, he played 36 minutes. He was brought on and brought off. This was not a cheap player, Leroy Sané, and all the headlines today in Germany is about him and not the win that they did in Leverkusen.
Jurgen, Sané did not look happy when he left the field. Will this be, as Jan says, a big deal in the German press?
Oh, it will be a very big deal, obviously, because Leroy is national team player, is a huge name, and a very, very highly talented young player. But this is a message. It's a message from the coach saying, you know what, I put you in there, and we didn't do things that the way I wanted to see, and I needed to make another change. I needed to make something different in order to get that result. So that's Bayern Munich. They have this type of a mentality to say, you know, what is more important? More important is to get 3 points here. So he makes that substitution, knowing that he obviously will get him really upset, will get him mad at him maybe as a coach. But Bayern Munich is just bigger than that. So they sub him out. They bring in Musiala. Musiala, he hits the post then. In the second half, Kimmich gets his first couple of minutes after a long injury. And they pick up their rhythm. And what I was really kind of surprised was that Bayer Leverkusen in the last 15 minutes, they were playing on time. They just wanted to badly kind of save this 1-1. They didn't want to go anymore for a winner. And that signal to Bayern Munich is fatal. Bayern is then just taking over and saying, okay, we're gonna get these 3 points, even if it's in the last second, as they did. But the story definitely will be in Germany the next couple of days. Leroy Sané's substitution, and I guess, Hansi Flick, the coach, he will sit him down for a coffee, and they have to discuss that a little bit.
Craig, subbed on only to get subbed off. Pretty humiliating from the player's perspective, yeah?
Oh, I think it's humiliating no matter what level you play at, if that was to happen to you. I mean, fortunately, I never had that scenario. But I agree with Jurgen. I think he's sending a message to the player here that you know, since his move from Manchester City, that the club expects more. And maybe that's, I don't know if it expects more on the training field as well as on the field, but as a generalisation. But I think he's going to have to manage the situation now, as Jurgen said. Now, as a player, you can go two ways. You can get your chin on the floor and sulk and come in and mope around, or you can work harder and try and show your manager that he's wrong and that you are good enough for a place in the team. Now, he wasn't good enough and hasn't been for a place in the starting lineup, but to come on and be taken off is very, very embarrassing, particularly for a player of his ability. I remember Glenn Hoddle taking me off in a London derby against Tottenham. I think the score was 4-3 in 94, I think it was. And the 84th or 85th minute, he took me off to waste time, and I nearly had a fight with him in the dugout, and I had to go and apologise to him in his manager's office at the end of it. Now, had he brought me on and taken me off, we were definitely having a wrestling match. So there is emotions out there. Sometimes you don't understand it as a player when a manager makes a decision, but that's a shot across the bows of that young man, that this club has raised standards once again in recent years, and he's going to have to up his game.
Jan, on this show, time and time again, you've been desperately, desperately crying out for a title race in the Bundesliga. Not only does Munich win today over Leverkusen, Leipzig drops points as well. Do we now have our answer about whether there'll be a title race this year?
No, there won't be a race. I mean, we can say it, but Bayern Munich will, with that culture, with that DNA that they've got, and maybe now, I mean, I saw some stats. They lost once this season, this year, and that was against Hoffenheim. And there should be a time now, maybe these last 2-3 months, where there should be some weaknesses in the system. And by Bayern's standard, there have been some weaknesses. They're conceding a lot of goals. They're going 1-0 behind, but still they managed to win. And I saw the game yesterday between Dortmund and Union Berlin. I mean, Dortmund wasn't good or anything like that, but they at least take a point home. But, you know, they don't have that. They don't have that culture. And that's why Bayern always take these games away, because the weaknesses, they never had to pay for them this last month, and then they will go away. It will be a race. It will be more like a Lewis Hamilton kind of race. It will be one lap ahead of everybody else.
Jürgen, what do you think? Any chance we get a title race this year in the Bundesliga?
Yeah, I still have hopes in Leipzig, to be honest, even if they left 2 points today against Cologne at home. I think that that's a team that has improved a lot over the last few years and is more resilient, has leadership within the team. They can make things happen. But my fear, obviously, all the other fans for the Bundesliga have that fear that at a certain point Bayern Munich will be up there by themselves, you know, and just run away from everyone. And hopefully it's not the case, but this was another proof today that they are just simply on a different level.
Craig, any reason to suspect Bayern Munich might not win the title this year?
No, not really. But you got to just hang in there, as Leipzig and Leverkusen are doing at the moment. And, you know, Leipzig play some great stuff, but I think they're a little bit lightweight up front in terms of having a natural goal scorer that's going to bag them, you know, 20 plus goals a year. Leverkusen, that, as Jürgen said, that was an unbelievable goal from Schick today, and we should not take that away from him. And you know, Bayern were only sending one man out for short corners, which was strange, and they almost paid for it. But look, they can be a little bit off, as they were at times today, and still win. But you can't make the mistakes that other teams are making against them. When you've got them on the floor, you've got to keep them on the floor. And as I say, there was plenty of opportunities for this young Leverkusen side with their pace to run in behind and get that second goal or get that third goal. But they're just not making, they just never made the right decisions or played the final pass correctly. And that's the difference between the sides at the moment. When it comes down to it, you see a bit of quality from Thomas Müller for the cross, and then you see the finishing from Lewandowski. That really was the big difference between the teams today.
Right then, gentlemen, we'll leave it there. Bayern Munich 2-1 winners over Bayer Leverkusen. That leaves the Bundesliga table like this heading into Sunday. Munich 2 points clear of Leverkusen and Leipzig. Dortmund in there to round out the top four.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Liverpool now are 5 points clear of their neighbors, second place Everton, after a 7-0 victory against Crystal Palace. Everton moving up to second after they beat Arsenal 2-1. Manchester City in the sixth there after they beat Southampton by a final score of 1-0. To discuss those games, Craig Burley and Steve Nicol are with us. Stevie, the last time Liverpool played, there was some discussion as to whether the better team actually won. Did the better team win today?
Well, not according to Roy Hodgson, but I'm scared to say anything good because Mr. Burley over there is going to start crying Liverpool TV again. I mean, what can you say? You talk about the perfect performance, creating loads of chances, scoring loads of goals, keeping a clean sheet, completely dominating the game. I mean, it's just amazing. 7-0 away at... Listen, this wasn't against a team that are flat bottom of the league and struggling big time. This is a team who can be dangerous to anybody. And so the fact that they wiped the floor with them, I mean, just outstanding. And a perfect game, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, Craig, that's a good point. This Palace team 7 days ago held Spurs. And here, 7-0 against Liverpool. If that's the gap between 1 and 2, I know Spurs have dropped now, but yikes.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't have a discussion about who was the best team. We had a discussion about what Mourinho said, which none of us agreed with. I don't think anybody thinks Tottenham are or were a better team than Liverpool on that occasion. We sort of discussed, not argued, I would say, we discussed the chances that Tottenham had. But you know, this was another marker down from Liverpool. This was the Liverpool that we've known over the last 24 months. We've seen them, along with others this season, just stagger along like the Fulham away game. And there has been many on the road where they haven't travelled well, Brighton away. But this was the real Liverpool. This was clinical. It was ruthless. It was once you get your opponent down, you keep them down and you keep pummeling away. And there was none of this, well, it's 5 or 6, we'll take our foot off the gas because it's getting a bit embarrassing for Crystal Palace. If Liverpool could have had 10 today, they would have taken 10. Mm. And I think they cemented their place clearly as the favourites for this Premier League and sent a message out to those that are capable potentially of catching that's the standard you're going to have to get to if you're going to take that title away from us.
Stevie, it's the best Liverpool has looked since...
Oh, no question.
Since when?
Not quite. Since probably the restart. Mm. I mean, have they had a better performance since the pandemic kicked in, 8 months ago? And then we had the stoppage and then we had the restart. I don't think they've had a better performance from start to finish. Mm. They may have played as well, but they maybe haven't scored as many goals. They may have played as well, but let a goal in. They maybe have looked... as well as they've played in certain games, looked vulnerable. You know, Craig's talking about a couple of chances that Spurs had. You know, so as good as they played in that game, they still gave up some chances. And this game, you can't say that. This was, as I said, the perfect game.
Craig, it's interesting. We hear a lot of talk about, like, Chelsea having the deepest, best squad in the league. Liverpool was in an injury crisis, and they're rolling right along. You know, they got the young guys, Curtis Jones, Reece Williams, performing midweek. Today, it's Minamino. I mean, this team is as deep as anybody, aren't they?
Well, Chelsea have got a deep squad, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's the best squad. And you know, clearly there was reinforcements in the summer for Frank Lampard. We know that. He was heavily backed. We also know Liverpool have had a barrage of injuries, and that's resulted in Jurgen Klopp. You know, I've called it whinging, but he's whatever you want to call it. He's been moaning about games, about fixtures, about substitutes and all that. And so you kind of thought it was transmitting through to the players a little bit. But that was all sort of put to bed today. And yeah, I think the key is that some younger guys have got game time, particularly Curtis Jones in the middle of the park, who has flourished in the last 2 or 3 months. There's no doubt about that. I know he came off the bench today. But he's shown that he can come in, and there are others. And so, when Liverpool lost the but just come up a bit short against Man City a couple of years ago, you looked at the bench and you thought, right, the starting 11 is excellent, but it does need reinforcements on the bench, and they got that. They got that, and that got them over the line last year. And they're going to have to utilise it all this year again because of the pandemic, because of the injuries. And he's got players who can give game time, like Minamino today, and there are others that you have mentioned. So things are looking rosy for them. But listen, there's going to be a lot of bumps and humps before the end of the season. There's no doubt about that. There's a really thick, heavy Christmas and New Year period coming up, barring any potential postponements because of the announcements in London today in regards to the pandemic. We'll see what happens there. Who knows if these fixtures will all take place. But if they do, it's going to come thick and fast, and that's going to be another test of all these squads that are challenging for the Premier League title and at the other end battling against relegation.
Stevie, a quick word on Firmino, getting a lot of criticism this season when the goals don't come. He gets 2 today. The second was a great finish, but for my money, man, I loved the first because he started it and ended it.
You know, you always hear us talking about confidence, and some people say, well, what's this confidence nonsense? Well, in the last couple of weeks, you've seen a guy in Firmino who at home, we were kind of sniggering because he was missing chance after chance, but Liverpool was still getting results. And he looked as though he was lacking confidence. The way he was finishing was there was no commitment in it whatsoever. In the space of 2 weeks, you see what this guy's all about. I mean, the little dink over the goalkeeper is just incredible. You talk about composure, you talk about touch, you talk about intelligence, you talk about the timing of the chip. But he made it look so easy. And that's the key. When you're confident, when you're playing football and your confidence is sky high, everything just comes naturally to you. You think straight. Your passes hit the mark with the right pace, with the right weight. And that's what you saw today from Firmino, a guy who, in the space of a couple of weeks, has gone, particularly in front of goal, to being nervous, to a guy who's absolutely at the top of his game.
Elsewhere Saturday, Manchester City 1-0 winners away to Southampton. Raheem Sterling, the goal scorer. Craig, Man City got the goal very early in this game. Did they deserve the full 3 points?
Yeah, I mean, I think they controlled the game enough. I mean, Southampton were certainly not cannon fodder, and that was to be expected the way they've been playing. But I think we're seeing a little sea change at City in terms of the way they're approaching games. There's clearly a shift to being slightly more defensive-minded, and that has taken away an edge of their attacking threat. On top of that, we saw, once again, Bernardo Silva in particular, and I've pointed him out on a couple of occasions. One was at Tottenham when they lost, and another one today when this guy's got so much ability, but what the hell is wrong with him when he's in front of goal? He wants to pass the ball when he's 8 yards out rather than going and taking his chances. I mean, it's just incredible. On top of that, Kevin De Bruyne, you know, in the final third with his finishings, not been as slick and as clinical. But they're keeping clean sheets. And that's been a big problem for them over the last couple of years when they haven't been successful in certain tournaments. And there's a definite sea change in terms of the way they're approaching games. They're a little bit more cautious. They're a little bit more compact. That is taking an edge off them going forward, but it's getting them the 3 points at the moment. Mm.
Yeah, Stevie, it used to be Manchester City would get a lead and add a second or a third. They don't really do that anymore. Some of it surely is what Craig's talking about, but some of it is also just really wasteful, poor finishing, isn't it?
Are you talking about for the opposition? Because if you're talking about the opposition, I was thinking about this after the game. I don't remember Southampton making a clear chance. This is a team that's nearly scoring 2 goals a game in the Premier League, and they never created a real chance where you're saying they should have scored. So I think that tells you how tight Manchester City are, certainly defensively. Now, again, the question is going forward, they absolutely have lost their shooting boots. But I would suggest a little bit of that's their problem. They're going to have to change. Yes, they've changed a little to be more defensive, but I think they need to get the ball forward quicker. You know, they take far too long to get the ball from back to front, and by then, regardless of whether it's Southampton or anybody else, now they've got so many bodies behind the ball. And right now, other than De Bruyne, they don't really seem to have anybody who's going to create or even steal a goal from nowhere. You know, when David Silva was there and Aguero was playing and they were flying, those were the two key guys up against a packed defence. Well, they don't have them anymore, and they really don't have anybody who's taken over that sort of mantle. So I think they're going to have to change a little. I think they're going to have to get the ball forward quicker. And actually, if you think about it, the goal they scored today, you talk about on Manchester City, Edison kicks the ball 65 yards, they get a second ball, De Bruyne whips it in and Sterling scores. I mean, that is totally on Man City. So maybe they need to try to think about doing a little bit more, not just kicking it, but, you know, looking a bit further forward earlier.
As I heard somebody say on the World Free commentary that we got here in the US today, to that point, that the City goal was very much a City goal. It was a goal we know they score, and it was, as Stevie said, it was completely the opposite. And it was like, it was the old, you know, blood and guts, pick up the second ball, and then all of a sudden you've got the team. I mean, Ederson shelled it, you know, nearly 80 yards. You know, just shelled it. It wasn't one of his normal ping passes. He hit it so far in the air, you know, and then they picked up the scraps. And as Stevie said, listen, there's nothing wrong with that. You don't have to score the perfect goal every time, which it seems on the odd occasion they're trying to do. But that's been enough for them at the moment. And the other interesting thing is as well is that this partnership, and it seems to be in its early days flourishing between Stones and Ruben Dias, is actually a little bit of a surprise. And it's maybe even a surprise to Pep Guardiola, who probably thought it was going to be a Laporte and Dias partnership. And as it turns out, it's John Stones, who's fit again, looks as if he's got his mind on the game. And it's going to be a big year for him. But we know he's a good player. But if he can just cut out those mistakes, which he has since he's been back in the team, then things are going to be looking better for him and City.
Craig, the reason I asked if it was a deserved win for City is because there are a couple penalty shots there for Southampton. One in the first half, Danny Ings. Another one on Raheem Sterling where, you know, it looked to me very clear that he handled the ball in his own penalty area. Either of those a penalty for you?
I'm just not sure. I mean, when I first saw the Ings one, my first thought was penalty. And then I thought, do you know what? He's anticipated the contact, and I think he just had to be braver, if I'm being frank. Because you've got to expect a challenge coming in. So I would loathe to give a penalty there. The Sterling one popped off his thigh, and I personally don't think that's a penalty kick. I know there are some people out there that may, but I think he was a little unlucky. It skipped up off his thigh. His arm was relatively tucked in, and I think that might have been a harsh one.
Stevie, if it's a deflection off somebody else, that's one thing. That was Raheem Sterling's first touch. It was his touch into his hand. Was it a penalty?
Sorry, not a penalty. However, I would have given the Danny Ings one. Mm. You know, I think it's a dangerous challenge. You know, defender's foot's way up near Ings's chin, and I know you can say he needs to be braver, but if somebody's big toe's coming towards your chin, it certainly makes you think, and it certainly puts you off. So, I would have given that as a penalty kick. I'll be honest.
Listen, let me just make a quick point, and I wouldn't argue against it. I mean, I think it was a 50-50 call, but the game is this is strange. The game is refereed differently, it seems, when the ball is in and around the 6-yard box of the penalty spot. And I'll tell you why. There was in the West Ham game in midweek, there was a Sebastien Haller superb overhead kick, right? But there was a defender within heading distance of heading the ball away who, when Ali overhead volleyed this into the net from what his foot looked as if it was at least 6 or 7 feet in the air, almost took the defender's, metaphorically speaking, he'd almost, you know, took his head off, clattered him in the head. But that's never, ever, ever, ever refereed as a high boot. And I'd personally, and I'm not trying to take these superb goals out of the game, What are you supposed to do as a defender in that situation? Just not go for it? Or just presume you're going to get a boot in the face? So it's weird, but the game is refereed differently in some of these scenarios than it would be, because that challenge on Ings, as Stevie said, I mean, if that had been outside the box, right, it's going to be a free kick 100 times out of 100. But for some reason, the game is refereed differently in these scenarios.
Stevie?
Though both of those are completely down to the referee's interpretation. You know, my interpretation, if I was the referee, would be that Danny Ings could have gotten to that cross if it wasn't for the boot coming up towards his face. Whereas, in my opinion, the Haller goal, the defender for me was never getting there. But again, it's an interpretation, and when it comes down to interpretation, then it's tough to just always ask for consistency.
Let's push on.
Let's get to Arsenal.
I know you're itching for it. Let's push on.
Everton, who wants to go first? Stevie
Everton,
or me? I don't mind. Stevie, you want to go? Or who's going to go first on Arsenal here?
I'll go. I'm going to be nicer than you.
Are you? All right. Everton 2-1 winners. What's nice to say about Arsenal after that, Stevie?
Well, I think there's no question. They went out and had a bit of spirit about them. You know, they're on a horrible run. They didn't start the game particularly brilliant, but they picked up and put some pressure on Everton at the end.
Craig, you want to call him Arsenal TV now?
He's getting paid off Arsenal TV as well.
Oh, my God. What the point here is, is that this is kind of where we're judging Arsenal now. You know, we have to stop judging Arsenal of the Invincibles and all this fantastic football and dominating teams and scoring lots of goals. We keep judging them on those sides. They're miles away from that. So when they turn up away from home at Everton and lose narrowly 2-1, it's, well, you know what, this is what Arsenal are. So we shouldn't judge them on a team 10 years ago that were just brilliant.
Craig?
Yeah, well, you know, to echo that, it was to be expected. So it's not a surprise. Listen, the way I would frame it is they were good for a minute around the 94th minute when they were desperate and the referee was about to blow the whistle and they fizzed a few balls
Pickford
across.
Pickford made a save. That,
Eh?
Yeah, that's Pickford one way save. To say it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say they were good for a minute in desperation. The rest of the game, they were poor. I mean, you might look at it and say, well, in the second half, Arsenal got better. I wouldn't look at it that way because I tell you why. Everton under Ancelotti have been renowned for dropping off. And just, even at home, they'll drop off and they'll try and soak it up. They did it to Chelsea, they'll do it to others. And then they'll try and hit with Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin and the pace and physicality. So I don't think it was Arsenal come out in the second half and played a little bit better and, you know, did this. I just think that's Everton. Everton don't look to dominate games. Particularly when they're in the lead, they'll drop off, they'll get men behind the ball because they know Calvert-Lewin will use his pace to run in behind. And, you know, as Stevie said, look, you know, we shouldn't get too angry with Arsenal, but maybe we should because we should expect more from this club, from this hierarchy, from this ownership. We should expect better from these players that are not anywhere near good enough to be challenging, but are surely good enough to be 15th. They could be 16th tomorrow. If Brighton beat Sheffield United in the early game, 16th. Now, they're good enough, more than good enough, to be better than where they are. So that's enough reason to give them criticism. But they're million miles off being back to where this club needs to be. It is a total mess. And listen, it's not all Arteta's fault, but the buck will stop with him because this can't continue. He's probably got another 3 or 4 games. And if they lose the next 3 or 4, what are Arsenal going to do? Because by that time, they'll be teetering on the bottom three. And that's
not... Is it going to make any difference, Craig?
Eh?
Do you think it would make any difference if they sacked Arteta? I'm not so sure it would make any difference. I mean, he got them at the end of last year. They won the FA Cup. But...
Yeah.
Just generally across the board, the players aren't good enough. I'm not so sure that another manager is going to make a huge difference with this lot.
No, and I agree, but I think, you know, the board will come under... Somebody's going to come under pressure if it continues. And you know yourself, I know there's no crowds, or there's little crowds at games, but executives and chief execs and sporting directors, they don't like it when fans wait outside and turn on them. And they usually find a scapegoat. And they won't want to take the blame themselves. And that, as you well know, Stevie, from being in that job, the scapegoat always is the manager. That's the problem. If we're 4, 5, 6 more games into, you know, more defeats, and that could happen, these people at the top will look for scapegoats, right? And unfortunately, that will be and always is the manager. So he's going to have to find a way to stop this rot.
Stevie, real quick, a word on Everton. This is a team that got off to a flying start this season, then kind of regressed to the mean. You thought, okay, this is the real Everton. The last couple of weeks, man, they've been really, really good.
Do you know, under Ancelotti, they've got a real strength to them. You know, previously they'd have little flurries where they'd be really good. You think they were coming out of funk or coming out of their averageness, shall we say. And then we go back into it. But, I mean, this team was missing 4 of the better players. You know, you've got 2 centre-backs who were playing full-backs today. You've got no Hammers and no Allen. I mean, Allen and Hammers are by far 2 of their better players. And, of course, when you've got centre-backs playing full-back, usually you're holding your breath whenever somebody's going at them. So, listen, they've got a real strength about them and a real good shape and a real good spirit. And, you know, if they have as much money behind them as we think they have, then if they can build on what they're doing now with you know, better players and bigger signings, then they're only going to climb up the table where they will be challenging, certainly for the top four.
Craig, they're second place right now as we go to tape. Are they title contenders or are they top four contenders?
No, if they could get into the top four, it would be an unbelievable season for them. It would be a great start. It would be a perfect platform for them to build and go and potentially spend some more money. I mean, I never thought they would get Ancelotti in as manager, but he's taken that role. I'm sure he's not on a small salary. I didn't think they would be able to entice the likes of Alan and James Rodriguez. They have. So that tells you that Ancelotti and the club have got a little bit of pulling power to get better players in there. They're willing to spend. They're willing to go out and try and entice that kind of player. And if you can get around that fourth spot or whatever it is in some Champions League football, it makes it a hell of a lot easier. And that's going to be their battle. You know, they're not going to dominate games. We know that. But they're big and they're strong and they're organised. And as Stevie said, they had at least four of their players out today. So things are looking good for them, but it's not going to be a title challenge. But a push for the top four is certainly on the cards at this moment in time.
Thanks, boys. We'll leave it then with a look at the bottom half of the Premier League table. As Craig mentions, Arsenal 15th as we sit right now, could be 16th by the end of the weekend. Also worth noting, Fulham Newcastle play out to a 1-1 draw. That leaves Fulham just above the relegation line.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Another match day in Spain, and Barcelona have dropped points yet again, this time after a 2-2 draw against Valencia at the Camp Nou. Messi and Araujo, your goal scorers for Barcelona, who had a 2-1 lead late into the second half before a 69th-minute equalizer from Valencia. For more, we welcome in Alejandro Moreno and Julian Laurent. Ale, in the match stats there, we saw 73% possession for Barcelona, but this tie felt like maybe almost even more than what Barcelona deserved from this match. What'd you make of the performance?
Think about the three-point line in a basketball game and draw that same imaginary line, arcing line, from one corner around the 18-yard box over to the other corner. And then picture every attacking Barcelona player, other than perhaps Martin Braithwaite, all of them in and around on top of that imaginary line. And that is what that 72% possession, 73% possession comes from. And that is touch, right, touch left, pass right, pass left, never forward. It's always around that imaginary line. It's always around that sort of umbrella shape of possession. And you don't really threaten. And so you're Valencia, yes, you're pushed back, and yes, you're absorbing a lot of pressure. But it's not the sort of pressure that is really creating goal-scoring opportunities. And so for all that possession, whenever Barcelona did turn the ball over and Valencia went on the attack, Valencia looked like the more likely team to score on the counter than Barcelona ever did with all that possession. And this is not something that is new. This is not something that we're surprised about. What we're surprised about is how easy other teams are able to score against Barcelona and how difficult it is for Barcelona to create goal scoring opportunities. Because if you're going to have the ball for that period of time, at the very least, since you're having it on the attacking half, it should take more than two passes in order for Valencia to go on the attack and have a 1v1 situation against Ter Stegen, and Ter Stegen having to come up with a save. And yet that's how easily they play through Barcelona. It is a lot of work for Barcelona to create goal scoring opportunities. It is a lot of work for Barcelona to score goals. And yet it isn't nearly as much work for other teams to threaten and score against Barcelona.
Jules, from a Barcelona fan standpoint, man, it must just be so frustrating to watch this team play, not just because of how Ale describes the way in which they play, but the inconsistency from match to match. If ever there was a moment you thought, okay, Barcelona has some momentum, it's coming off the Real Sociedad result, the win midweek. And yet today, really, at home, they laid an egg, didn't they?
Yeah, but if we go back slightly and quickly on the Real Sociedad game, they had a decent first half, a good first half, and then it was quite chaotic, and the second half was not good. And again, that was against the team that plays. So when they play against the team that plays, there's no problem, especially at the Camp Nou, because they'll have space and it's easier, more fluid for them to go forward. When they play against a team that sit deep, and we've seen that many times this season, but also last season, they struggle because, like Ali said, they have a lot of possession. After 20 minutes today, they had completed 220 passes. Mm. 220 passes in 20 minutes, and they had no shot on target. They hadn't created anything. And on the other hand, 10 minutes later, Valencia went to score. They could have scored with a Soler shot that Ter Stegen made an amazing save. And then on the corner, Jacabi scored because Barcelona can't defend on set pieces. We saw the marking. It was shocking. Shocking the way they marked the Valencia players, and especially Jacabi on that corner, for example. And I just think it's not good enough. I think Koeman is clueless. We saw that again with his substitution. We saw the same against Real Sociedad with his substitution. They made no sense. And again today, why do you bring Longley in at 2-2? Go and try to win the game instead of first taking Griezmann off and then bringing Longley on and taking Coutinho off. Do something else to try to win the game instead of keeping the 2-2 and a draw.
Mm. Ale, how much of today's result is on Koeman?
Yes, and a lot of it. I agree with Julian in that some of the substitutions, in particular going back to the game against Real Sociedad, you just kind of went, what was that? What are we trying to do here? And then you take it to today's game and you think about, all right, who's going to come off? And because I will tell you this about Barcelona, because of that line that I just told you about, that umbrella-shaped line, there are a lot of redundant players and in redundant spaces. So a guy like Coutinho, I have no idea, honestly, when you watch him play, how is it that he's going to change the game? How is it that he's going to do something different? Because he seems to be doing a similar job to whatever Pedri is doing. And Griezmann, because of his role in this team, is still to be defined. He seems to be doing a similar job to what Messi may be doing. They all take themselves out of the 18-yard box, and they all occupy each other's spaces. Now, in terms of the marking in that goal by Diakabi, and this I put on the coaching staff in particular, and specifically to your question, Seb, why is Antoine Griezmann matched up with Diakabi in a corner kick setup? Because in a set piece is, from my experience, you know exactly who you're picking up. It's something that has been discussed, and it is written out on boards all over the locker room. You know who your matchup is. How, in a meeting between coaches prior to this game, you say, who are we going to match up with Diakabi? Yes, Antoine Griezmann. That makes sense. Mm. No, it sure doesn't. And yes, it's poor marking by Griezmann. Yes, he gets picked out of the play. Yes, he gets outrun into the space by Diakabi. But it's a matchup that should never have happened, because you just look at the players, and by size alone, you say, well, this doesn't make sense. Mm. This is not a matchup that we want. Why is Araujo free in the near space rather than having Griezmann in the near space and Araujo being the guy picking up Diakabi, who matches up with size? Those are questions that have to be asked. And quite frankly, watching from the outside in, it's very difficult to figure out an answer.
Jules, let's talk about the star man. We'll spend a lot of time on this show talking about individual performances. A lot of times with you, a lot about a guy like Paul Pogba. What about Lionel Messi today? I mean, he gets his goal. It's a historic one. Ties him with Pelé for most goals ever. With one club, but it comes off a missed penalty. And other than that, man, and we've said this a lot before this year, just he doesn't look like the same old Messi.
No, I think it's hard. It must be hard to play in a team that has no structure, no idea, no identity. I think what Koeman is doing is a mishmash. And I think if you're Leo Messi and you're that genius and you've been used for all those years to have options every time you're on the ball, to have people running, to have movement, and sometimes more than others, you know, at times certain managers more than others, but more or less, you've always had that around you, and now you've got nothing. I mean, you have nothing. It's just, he has the ball, and then he has to do again, everything on his own. And I just think even him, even the greatest of all time, struggles to do that. Because I think there's a certain point where you can't. Remember the game against Juventus? Barca had 7 shots on target, all from Messi, because there was nothing else. Every time he had the ball, the only thing he could do is trying to shoot. Because otherwise, nothing would happen. And I felt today was quite similar. There's an amazing ball for the penalty on Griezmann. I'm still not sure it's really a penalty. I don't think that Gaia pushes Griezmann that much anyway. But at least I'm glad it was not a red card and he was overturned. Even the penalty, it's a bit soft. But anyway, the pass is incredible. But apart from that, there's just not enough around him. And I can't blame him, although he probably has his part of responsibility in here. I don't know if he puts all the effort. I don't know if he really wants to be there. I don't know if he gives up maybe too easily at times. I'm not sure. But I can't believe, if you go and put your feet in his shoes and imagine what he's had for 20 years now, 15 years at that level, and now he's got this. I mean, come on.
Ale, I get it. The manager's getting it all wrong. The players around him aren't as good as they used to be. But how much of the responsibility is on Messi?
Well, there's responsibility because he is the face of the club. And whatever happens with Barcelona, sure, we're going to talk about Ronald Koeman and we're going to talk about the lack of performances from other players. But at some point, you also have to look at Lionel Messi. And the thing about Messi that can be frustrating is that, and it's a personality thing. It's not so much about whether there's a performance or not. It's just a body language of Lionel Messi at times doesn't really inspire the confidence that he is fully engaged into what's going on. What I would say about Messi is that whatever he has going on around him, I don't think he trusts Ronald Koeman, and I don't think he trusts most of the players that are on the field with him. And so therefore, he feels the responsibility to shoulder that load, to carry that load, and to try to do it himself. And in doing that, he's hurting himself and he's hurting the team as well. I give you an example. It's a coaching decision to have Martin Braithwaite played out wide. It's a decision that I don't quite understand because you lose presence as a focal point in the attack inside the 18-yard box that is not there if you don't have Braithwaite down the middle because Messi will drift into wider areas and Antoine Griezmann doesn't occupy that space. That's a coaching decision. For Messi, as he now wanders around the field and is trying to find an option inside the 18-yard box, once he takes himself out of that position, then there's nobody to combine. So while the coaching position is affecting the performance of Messi, it's the movement of Messi away from the dangerous position that is also affecting his decision-making and the success of the team. All those things put together give you a team that struggles offensively to create enough opportunities. It's on everybody. But clearly, Koeman is going to have a problem here. And then Messi, at some point, we have to say, you know, buddy, you either trust what's going on around you and the players that you have around you and you buy into whatever it is that Koeman is selling, or this thing is simply not going to go forward. Because the truth of the matter is that people are looking at you, other players are looking at you and saying, if he's not into it, if he's not buying in, I'm not quite sure that we know what to do either. Because we're looking for him to be the guy who resolves the problems for us.
Barcelona then dropping points. Atletico Madrid did not. They were home against Elche, get a 3-1 win. A couple goals for Luis Suarez. A goal from a very dubious penalty as well for Diego Costa. Ale, Atletico Madrid definitely needed these 3 points after the loss against Real Madrid. They got the 3 points, but what about the performance?
Not great. But you know what's interesting about this team is that they simply cannot, I think, succeed by being comfortable. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it is the personality of Simeone. I don't know if it is the personality within the team. That being comfortable is not a strength of theirs. So winning a game 3-0, 4-0, it doesn't quite work for them. It's got to be a little bit of a struggle. So at 2-0, you think, okay, here we go. No problems, no issues. Luis Suarez scoring a couple of goals. That's important for Atletico Madrid. And yet, it's a little bit of a struggle. And Elche get back into the game, and it's 2-1. And now Oblak is having to come up with a save here and there. And it was in the best moment of Elche where Diego Costa draws his penalty that, well, you call it dubious. Yeah, no penalty. However, somehow, VAR upholds the decision of the referee. And then they go on and win 3-1. It's an important 3 points just to kind of generate momentum going forward. But it's not comfortable for Atletico Madrid. And I think, in some ways, they kind of like it that way.
Jules, let's leave the penalty discussion just for another second. Just quickly on the Atletico Madrid performance. We're just talking about Barcelona, who are starting Martin Braithwaite as their number nine. Man, they could use a number nine, a guy that scores two goals first time since November 7th. A big performance for Suarez and Atleti.
Yeah, it was big. It was big for Suarez to come up with those two goals. The typical Suarez goal, if you want, because he's got that sense for goal, which is incredible. The second one, the ball from Carrasco, is fantastic. But Suarez is there again, you know, to score it. And he can't run like before. He cannot make them. He can't use his the movement or make the movement like he used to before. The runs are not the same. And that will never be the case because he's got dodgy knees and he's getting older and all of that. However, again, the sense of goal, the ability to be in the right place at the right time all the time, to be so clinical. You know, I didn't think he would do that well, I have to be honest. And I said it when he signed. I just didn't think that he still had that in him in a way, and that Atleti could evolve in a team that can provide goals for him like that. Because if you can put those balls in for Luis Suarez, you know he's going to be there and you know he's going to score you 15, 20 goals a season, even if he's only half fit and on one leg. And I thought today was the perfect example of what you can do if you have Luis Suarez as a striker and if you've got people who can provide balls like Carrasco on the second one.
Jules, this Diego Costa penalty, I don't know what you saw. I didn't see any contact. I saw like a total dive. I'm okay with the center ref getting fooled. That's happened a million times before, but this is, where was VAR?
I want to believe that maybe there's a handball before the dive from Diego Costa. There's a handball from the Elche defender who is like sort of behind Diego Costa with his hand a bit. I don't know. That's the only thing I can see, and I've watched it so many times today. Otherwise, it's impossible that they give that a penalty when there's clearly no contact. And you don't even need VAR. We saw it in front of the television. So there's no need for VAR to see there's no contact. But maybe I'm just thinking that's the only thing I can see is that maybe the handball that the defender touches the ball before he goes on to Diego Costa and the dive. I don't know. Apart from that, it's incredible.
Ale, I don't know if there's a ethics class at the Moreno Diving School. Do you have a problem with what Diego Costa did? Is it cheap? Is it dirty? Or is it fair game?
It's part of the game. It's not the best part of the game. It's not the prettiest part of the game. It's not the nicest nor the most ethical part of the game. But it's part of the game, and that's where VAR can come in and say, yeah, I don't think so. And yet, somehow, VAR says, you know what? Yeah, no problem here. No issues here. Yeah, penalty. Go on with it. It is 100% a dive, and let me tell you, I speak with knowledge on the matter. I know a dive when I see one. And that was 100% a dive.
Thanks, boys. Great stuff. One final look at the La Liga table. Atleti with a 3-point cushion over Real Sociedad and Real Madrid. Real Madrid in action tomorrow against Eibar. Sociedad losing 2-1 away to Levante on Saturday. And Barcelona still wallowing there outside the top four. You want more from Ale and Jules? No worries. The boys will be back for extra time where they take your tweets one by one and provide all the answers.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Jules still with us. Massive match in Ligue 1 on Sunday as PSG visit Lille. Jules, a Lille team that is 1 point ahead of the defending champions right now. Talk about the game in just a second, but huge injury news. Neymar and Mbappe for PSG, questionable.
You're right, Neymar, we know already is out. He won't play again in 2020. There's two more league games. The one, as you said, against Lille on Sunday, and then the one in midweek next week. He's out for those two. For Mbappe, he's doubtful for the game at Lille. He's got little niggles, I think, injury-wise. They're scared that maybe he can do something more serious, like put his hamstring or something like that. So I don't think they want to take any risk. The problem is, if Neymar is already out and you don't have Mbappe from the start, but he can only come on late like he did in the last game against Lorient, then I think you've got even more problem, because this is a PSG team so unpredictable, so up and down, where you still struggle to see the collective strength there, the patterns of play and all of that. And if on top of that you lose the most individual talent that you can have in your team that can just unlock a game and win you a game on his own, then I think you could be in big trouble.
Sets up perfectly then for Lille. How good is this Lille team?
It's really good. They've got so much talent, young players. You know, their business model is to get those young players, give them a platform to shine, and then sell them for far more money than they bought them for, which works. They also have really good experienced players like Joseph Font, like Burak Yilmaz, both of them really being the leaders in that dressing room and on the pitch. And so those young players can then really express themselves, the likes of Ikone and Bamba, Yazici, for example, who are, they're not 17 or 18. They're in their 20s, early 20s, but still, they still have that youth, that energy, the intensity in the way they play. Christophe Galtier, the manager, is doing such a great job there. They also threw for the last 32 of the Europa League, for example, where they had a really good campaign. But the league, they've been great. They can manage games well. They're very intelligent in the way they play, and they've been very efficient as well up front. Jonathan David, who started slowly his career at Lille, the Canadian international, not doing much better. And I think if you look at that game tomorrow in the north of France as well, Lille have to be favourite.
Jules, we ask you this every time PSG face a big match, but if things go horribly wrong, could it cost Tuchel his job, especially considering, as you say, there is just that little break coming up?
Certainly, yeah. If they lose again, that would be the fifth defeat already in 15 games. This would be unacceptable, I think. They will play the last game of the year in midweek. And then I think he could be gone during that winter break, if you want, and start with a new face, a fresh start for 2021. I just think that, of course, there was the qualification in the Champions League, which was great because it started so badly for them in that group stage, and they showed a lot of character. But again, this is not enough. This is not enough if you compare it with the form that they've had in the Champions League, despite the qualification, and also in the league, that they haven't been playing good despite all the talent that they have, far more talent and better talent than anybody else in that league. And yet, they're still trailing Lille. They could potentially be behind Marseille if they win the game in hand. There's also Lyon, who beat them last weekend, who are ahead of them in the table, or potentially are there. It's just not enough. It's not good enough from Tuchel, and he's made many mistakes in his coaching choices, both for the start of games and during games too. And I just think that another defeat, whether it's against Lille or next week, would cost him his place. I can't see how they could keep him for the start of next year in January.
All right, thanks, Jules. One look at the table tells you just how big a match this could be. Either Lille or PSG, should they win, would go top of the table over Lyon, who had themselves a good Saturday. 4-1 win that puts them atop the table. And that'll bring us to the end of this edition of ESPN FC. Thanks to Craig and Stevie for joining us, Jan and Jurgen as well. Thanks also to Ala and Jules. But their work, not yet done. Extra time starts right now. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into today's edition of Extra Time. Ale Moreno, Julian Ron, and me, Sebi. Plus your questions straight off of Twitter. Jules, start with you from Red Devils. Are Dortmund regretting not selling Sancho during the last transfer window? Is his price continuously dropping as this season keeps going? No goals for Sancho still in the Bundesliga this year.
Yeah, regretting is a very strong word. I don't know if they regret, because there's still half of the season to be played. He might improve and get better. But you know what? I'm always fascinated psychologically for a player. And Ali, between the three of us, Ali is the only one who can answer us. But when you really wanted to move like Sancho wanted in the summer, And for whatever reason, it doesn't happen. Psychologically, that must have an impact on you, even if you don't really feel like it or don't want it to have a negative impact on you. But because if your mind was already somewhere else, if you'd planned to move, if you were looking forward to the move as well, or things like this, I just don't know how you go back to, you know, staying where you are in the team. And it's not a bad team at all. And I'm sure there's a lot of friends that he has in the dressing room. But do you see what I mean? And because as well, the summer and the preseason was so weird and so different, and the start of the season and everything went so quickly. I just wonder if psychologically he was never going to have a good season anyway because of what happened and the move that never happened for him at Manchester United.
Ale, what do you think? Do you think having his head turned is the explanation for Sancho's struggles?
Well, it can be, and I think it's a valid point by Jules. I can tell from my own experience, at one point in the middle of my career, there was this sort of for my standards, was a big money move going to UAE, and sort of what those changes would be for my family, what it would mean financially, and there was a lot of conversation about it, and then the coach got fired, turmoil in the club, and things changed, and obviously I didn't go. But for that period of about 2 to 3 weeks where all this conversation was taking place, you're focusing on what's happening on the other side of the world and what your potential home will be rather than what your everyday preparation is. So I can sympathize with that. However, what I think is also happening here with Sancho is the fact that he looks around, and while his head was turned to go elsewhere, there are other guys that have now taken steps ahead of him, including Giovanni Reina. That players that may have been behind him in line now are in front of him and actually taking steps away from him. So Moukoko now comes in and scores a goal. So you imagine that he's going to be part of the conversation as we move forward. And so therefore now Sancho, who thought of himself as a no doubt I'm going to start for this team, to now I'm not starting, I'm not going to Manchester United, I'm here, and now I have to fight for a place as well. All of that put together, I think, gives you the lack of substance in the performances from Jadon Sancho so far this year.
All right, of course, we saw Crystal Palace give up 7 against Liverpool earlier this morning. Ale, next question for you. What was the heaviest defeat that one of your teams faced in your playing days, and how did it compare to the Liverpool match today? Did it ever get so bad that your manager started laughing, such as what Hodgson did?
I can't remember. No, definitely not 7-0.
Come on.
We took 4-0 against Brazil. 4-0 against Brazil World Cup qualifiers. 4-0 against Argentina World Cup qualifiers. And that was, I think that was about it. We lost 5-0 to the New York Metro Stars in 2002 with the LA Galaxy. Mamadou Diallo was killed.
What a throwback. I did not see a Mamadou Diallo reference in today's Extra Time.
And as you know, of course, we're in LA. We have to fly cross-country to go to New York. We get the 5-0 loss, and now we got to take this flight back, 6-hour flight back to LA. It was not a good flight at all. But it depends on the personality of the coach. Siggy would never have been the one to laugh it off, Siggy Schmidt, that is. And I'm pretty sure that there was some disgruntled conversations going on in the airport where he used to do the shirt talk, and that's, the shirt talk was the one in which he kind of saw you come by, getting to the gate area of the airport, and he would actually tuck your shirt, you know, just to kind of, he wanted to talk to you. It's like, here. And then you knew at that point that you were in for a conversation. You were trying to avoid that when you were a player after losing 5-0.
All right. Yesterday, in Extra Time, things got heated. Actually, it was a really good, really clever line from Rabo. He told Shaka that he was clumsy and a coward. What's the meanest thing someone has told you on air? Jules, I feel like we're not really mean to you on this show.
No. What was the context? Why did Robo attack Shaka like that?
We were talking about like red cards, and Shaka was describing one of his red cards where he kind of came out late and missed it or whatever. And Robo fired back. He said, well, there you go. We can sum up your career in 2 words. Clumsy and a coward. The reaction from the rest of us on the set, we were all like, oh. But it was good.
Strong.
Yeah, we get along on this show. We got thick skin.
I'm sorry. Question. Maybe harsh. Is it inaccurate though? That's what I'd like to know. Is it inaccurate?
I will leave analyzing Shaka's goalie career to someone else. We've been harsh enough on him yesterday. He really got it on extra time. All right, Unai Emery and now Arteta.
Hey, by the way, I'm sure that he's really affected by this.
Oh, yeah, Shaka lost sleep over it, for sure. Yeah. One of his many naps.
He's at home really having difficult times.
Had to bail out of. Unai Emery, now Arteta, haven't been able to lift Arsenal. Is the board the real culprit? People made fun of Wenger top four inspiration, which seemed extremely difficult to achieve in retrospect. Jules, are the problems at the top at Arsenal?
I mean, I think there's problems in a lot of places at the club right now, but at board level, I mean, there's a lot of fans or among the fan base who maybe would criticize the Kroenke family for the way they're running the club, but they also have given quite a lot of money recently for transfers. I mean, Nicolas Pepe has £72 million, Thomas Partey has £50 million. You know, it's not like if there was no money at all given to whoever was the manager or the sporting director at the time. So, I mean, at the top, of course, you could always do things better, and I guess they could employ better people all around and things like this, but the money is there. They've guaranteed some of the loans to protect the club during the pandemic. Of course, there was some redundancy, but again, I think there's a time where when your club is hit quite hard by the pandemic and so what happened, maybe that's a step that unfortunately you don't want to take, but you have to take. I don't know. For me, the problem is far more on the pitch than it is upstairs in the boardroom, but maybe for some fans, it's the other way around.
Barcelona question next for you, Ale. Don't you think that Ronald Koeman is being too harsh on Riqui Puig? Every time he's been given a chance, he's shown that he can provide a greater degree of athleticism and passing range, something that many of the first team players can't do. I think Koeman came out this week and criticized his attitude, didn't he? So both on the field and off the field.
And there's been some speculation and hints of Ronald Koeman saying that it's been Riqui Puig that has allowed access to what goes on inside the locker room with some social media posts and such, and that he is the leak between whatever happens inside the locker room and whatever information there is out there. That's a non-starter, by the way, if indeed that's the case. But what's also a non-starter is that when Ronald Koeman first came onto the job, as he was cleaning house, one of the players that he singled out and said, "You got to find yourself a team because you're not going to get the minutes you want with this group," was Riqui Puig. And let's not forget that if there was a highlight to the closing part of the season last year for Barcelona, it was Riqui Puig and his individual performances. You can say, you know what, there's something here with this kid. And yet Koeman came in and said, we don't think so. So this has never worked from the very beginning. And I don't anticipate it's going to work anytime soon either.
Jules, could Puig make a difference in this Barcelona?
I like him a lot, and Ali is right. Towards the end of last season, he played well. The problem is, and I think we've explained quite well during the show tonight, is the lack of structure of that team. If you put Riqui Puig in that team, he will move exactly in the same position that Coutinho moves in, and Messi, and Griezmann, and Pedri, and Coutinho, or whoever plays with him. That's the problem. It's the similar profile, it's the similar movement, and that's not going to take you anywhere either. It will be the same issue. So, yeah, of course, you could try if you want, but again, I don't think he has the answers and he has the keys to make this team better, to improve the team. And you know what? If they want to buy in January, and they will have to, certainly at the back, they need a centre back. If they want to go for Eric Garcia, for example, at Manchester City, they will need to sell first. Who can they sell in that squad that they want to sell with a value? I think Riqui Puig will have to be one of the first names on that list, and they can get some good money for him because he's a good young player with potential, and then you reinvest that money for a centre back or whoever else you want to buy. But for me, that's how the story is going to end. And Riqui Puig is a Barca through and through kid, no problem, La Masia, etc., etc. But Ali is right. He knew from the beginning he was not going to play, so he can't be surprised now. And I think the end of the story is January. They will sell him, they would get however millions, and then reinvest that for Eric Garcia.
Ale, big news in Major League Soccer this week. Your thoughts on the Gabriel Heinze hiring by Atlanta United?
Well, it makes a lot more sense than Frank DeVore ever did. I'll tell you that much. And this is the sort of direction that Atlanta should have gone in the transition, instead of going to the board, that you take a step that actually makes sense. And now, admittedly, we are not all too familiar with Gabriel Heinze as the manager and what he brings to Atlanta United. And so it's not Tata Martino walking in with this wealth of experience and background and everything that he could bring to the team. Gabriel Heinze is somewhat new to the profession, and is a guy that, yes, there's a lot of potential there and there's a lot of excitement there. And clearly, culturally, there is a connection with Gabriel Heinze and some of the parts inside that locker room already. So all of that points towards a better outcome than whatever you have with Frank De Boer. However, the bar is very low with Frank De Boer. And so whatever steps forward you take from here or not, I think it's something that Heinze can do very well.
All right, then last question. Who's the worst person on the show when it comes to responding to a text, email, or voicemail message, meaning who never responds or might even wait several days to respond? Also, do you guys have a private group chat among the ESPN crew? Jules, who never responds to your texts?
That's easy. Surely Stevie Nicol. Does he even have a phone? does he have any sort of technology in his house? And most importantly, does he know how it works? I think that's, you know, for me, Stevie has to be the winner way ahead of everyone else.
Yeah, he probably sends the text, but did it in like a tweet and didn't realize that it wasn't the text. Ale?
One of the sights to see is when Stevie is trying to read his phone or having an email come through his phone or whatever, and the confusion is just like, hey. What button do I push? And then because he gets confused, he just puts it away. And the email was never read. The message was never read. And so therefore, by default, it is Stevie Nicol. As for an ESPN FC crew secret chat, if you will, well, it is secret because Seb is not part of it.
I was going to say, this sounds like me, like the guy who never responds to text messages, but the only problem is nobody ever texts me. So, I mean, we can't really get in there.
Not be included in the chat.
That's what happens when you're the backup. All right, that's it for us here on Extra Time. Thanks to Ale, thanks to Jules, thanks to you for sending in your tweets. We will, of course, be back on tomorrow's edition of ESPN FC. Don't miss it.